Money FM 89.3, best of your money.
The OCBC phishing scam. Could it happen again? And could it happen to you? Why did some customers receive the fraudulent SMS while others didn't? Are hard tokens safer than 2FA? Those are some questions I have today as we discuss our topic, and we certainly want to make sure you don't fall prey to a similar scam. So we'll also look at how you can protect yourself should you find yourself in a similar situation. I've invited Raju Chellam to the show this morning. Raju is chief editor of AI Ethics and Governance Body of Knowledge. That's a BOK. In case you're wondering, a BOK is a living document with the capability of periodic updates and enhancements. So the one just mentioned is a collaboration between the Singapore Computer Society and the Infocom Media Development Authority, and it has contributions from some 30 authors. Raju Chellam also teaches an online ST masterclass on cybersecurity so that you can keep your virtual self secure, which is also our aim today. Good morning, Raju.
Good morning, Michelle.
Good to have you here. What a shock and what a blow it must have been to those 470 OCBC customers to learn that their hard-earned savings, combined 8.5 million, had been stolen by scammers who took advantage of the old short message service technology, old SMS technology, to impersonate the bank and then dupe the victims into handing over essentially their online banking login details. Among them, a mother of seven who said she lost almost $100,000, and a couple in their 20s who had taken 5 years to save about $120,000 because they wanted to start a family. Well, the good news is they'll still be able to get that family going because all of the roughly 470 customers affected will receive full payouts from the bank, described as full goodwill payouts. In the next 2 weeks also, banks in Singapore will have to put in place more stringent measures to bolster the security of digital banking. So one example, you and I won't receive SMSs or emails from the bank with clickable links. Even with these measures, Raju, let's put the question to you. Could this OCBC phishing scam happen again? And could it even happen to you, Raju?
Yes, it could. And it could happen to me. It almost happened to me. That's because we are all humans and can fall victim to either fear or greed, right? Mm-hmm. This is what scammers prey on. So can it happen to maybe you, to any one of us, no matter how well-versed we are in IT or even cybersecurity? At a moment of weakness, to use an old cliche, you have to be forewarned to be forearmed, which means unless you are aware and alert at all times, you can fall victim to this scam. In fact, to give you some numbers, over 600 scams involving $7.2 million in just the last one or two months.
Gosh.
The police are investigating that.
Globally or just here?
Oh, just here.
Just here. And you mentioned that, you know, we'd been talking off air and you said you'd receive the SMS yourself, right? And I'm just curious, why didn't you click on the link?
I almost did because I receive a lot of SMSs all the time, not just from banks, but from insurance companies or so-called insurance companies, retail agencies and so on.
Yeah.
And most of them have a URL address that you are required to click to get more information.
Exactly.
And like I said, in a moment of weakness, you almost do it. But that's only half the problem. The moment you click on that link, it asks you to fill up your personal details, like your address, your NRIC number, probably your credit card details or whatever. And if you take that second step, then the scamming is almost transparent because the scammer has all of your metrics. Your personal identity can be stolen. So if you ask me what is the number one vulnerability in all these scams, it is identity theft, which is the fraudulent practice of using another person's name and PII, which is personally identifiable information, to obtain credit, loans, banking details, and so on. In each of the cases of the OCBC scam, the victim's identity was stolen for a fraudulent financial gain.
So that's what they're going after, information about you, trying to impersonate you. Let's take a step back, okay, in terms of how this happened, what this is that we're dealing with. Now, was this a hack? Or was this a hack in the bank system? So is this a case of phishing? And does the difference really matter to the consumer who's using the bank?
So phishing is a broad nomenclature that refers to a cyber crime in which you are contacted by email or SMS or phone by someone posing as a legitimate institution to lure you into providing your PII or banking or credit card details and passwords. It doesn't really matter to the consumer because the consumer is conned either way, right? Either by email or phone or SMS. So right now I'm reminded of a quote from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
Said Romeo, yeah.
Yeah, a scam by any other name would stink as much.
Oh, did Juliet say that? It's a stink anyway. So, you know, recently one of my guests flagged this to me. There was a PR company, a global one actually, well, not originating in Singapore from what we can see, sending out emails to my former guests. They were mining my interview, my past interviews, looking for my former guests, sending them emails, and the headline said, Your Money with Michelle Martin. So my name was there. Media inquiry. And my former guest who flagged me to this said, you know, I clicked on that email because I saw your name there and I was excited to come back on your show. And I thought, goodness me, how brazen this is, because they were just using that email to fish, essentially, impersonate the show. They had nothing to do with the show. And they wanted to get former guests to buy their services as a PR company. So it's widespread. People do it. And of course, you know, I hope they stop. But the thing is, how do hackers target individuals? In this particular case, it's clear that they were going after some of my former guests, a lot of them high profile. Do hackers target their victims?
Yes, hackers, as a general rule, will target their victims. And how do they know about you? Because many of us broadcast our lives online on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, WeChat, LinkedIn, etc., and so on, right? Mm-hmm. A serious hacker will usually do his research on the victim's likes, fears, status, friends, etc. online before he actually makes the hit or attack, and hit the victim by preying on his fear, usually having committed an alleged crime, or his greed of wanting to make a quick buck. Mm. And you must remember that hackers are no longer lone wolves sitting in their bedrooms. Mm-hmm. But criminal organizations with dozens of people working for them. So I do research on the dark web, and some of the criminal organizations have hundreds of people who are doing, some of them are doing research, some of them are doing the hit, some are responsible for collecting money. So it's a very well-oiled operation that works out of countries where law enforcement is weak, where Interpol has very little influence, and where you can't get your money back.
I'm glad you raised the fact that you've researched the dark web, because I remember the show that we did with you on that, and it was absolutely terrific because you took me to an area that I had very little knowledge of. And for the listener, Raju has also written a book, fiction, Organ Gold, that's published by Straits Times Press, on the illegal trade in human organs on the dark web, and it's worth checking out. We're talking today about the OCBC scam, asking, what do you need to know? And what should you do to protect your money? Now, some listeners may be wondering, Raju, I want to get back to this point because I think it's interesting. Why did the SMS come my way? You know, some might be thinking that.
So an SMS is normally not sent by a human being. A bot will send out, say, hundreds of thousands of messages to everybody at random. So out of every 100 SMSs or emails or phone calls that the bot makes, maybe 10% will take the first step of clicking on it. And another 5% may take the second step of filling in their personal details.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that 5% are the ones who fell for the OCBC scam because they went online, they filled in their personal details without knowing, and because the sender ID was spoofed. So they were innocent victims, and all victims are innocent victims mm-hmm. in such cases.
Yep.
So in many cases, you may have got the SMS, you may have clicked on it, you may have filled in the details, but you may not have got the OTP, the one-time password sent to you. Why? Because your phone was probably hacked, or a phone of your identity was cloned by the hacker, so the OTP went to the hacker. And then the hacker could complete the transaction, increase the limits of your withdrawal, and withdraw money to his bank.
So again, there had to be some research done back end in order to make this happen, right? They'd have to know a little bit about the people they were hacking?
Yes, absolutely. So they would never strike unless they have done their research.
Oh, gosh. If we look at SMS, how vulnerable is SMS? We understand this is old SMS technology. How vulnerable is this technology to hackers?
So let's be clear that SMS is a technology that was introduced way back in 1992 when there were smart people and dumb phones.
Hmm.
There was no embedded security, and the SMS sender ID was set at 11 characters, and it has remained the same since then. So SMS is a good means of communication when there is no internet, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But hackers have used a flaw in the SMS by spoofing the sender ID and sending a web link with a message. And victims have fallen for this scam by clicking on the web link and filling in their personal details on the scammer's page. So let's not blame SMS. There are two issues in SMS. One is which the banks have been asked not to do, is not to send any clickable links on the SMS. That's number one. And number two, SMS is a good old-fashioned, reliable communication mechanism that works worldwide, and we should not throw the baby with the bathwater, for instance, by condemning all SMS as being useless technology. It still has a place.
So how important is it to have an anti-spoof national registry, do you think? Authorities say that they're going to roll one out to all the telcos and the SMS aggregators and the banks that use SMS for retail customers, essentially allowing for businesses to pretty much block these messages from being sent to customers, these spoofed messages. So a spoofed message would be a message that looks like it originated from a legitimate business or bank, right?
Right.
So how important do you think is a national anti-spoofing registry?
So a national SMS sender ID registry would be a welcome step, not just for banks, but for all institutions, including private companies who are in, say, retail or insurance or anything to do concerning money. Right, including the online e-commerce sites, for instance, because otherwise you have a risk of your name being spoofed and some part of that liability will come back and hit you or hurt you, because an innocent customer doesn't know or care. He just looks at the sender ID and says, oh, this is a legitimate organization with which I already do business. And if they send me this SMS, it must be legitimate. So a sender ID registry would ensure that only those who have registered on it will be able to use that specific sender ID and nobody can spoof it. But let me segue one step. And people may be wondering if there are legitimate companies that can send out millions of text or email messages on behalf of companies. Yes, there are legitimate companies, and some of them are, for example, Twilio, Vonage, Plyvo, Alvaria, Message Birds. These are names of companies that few people would have heard of, but they are used by thousands of businesses to send out millions of text, email, video on behalf of companies like banks, insurance companies, retailers, etc. And this is legitimate. However, all these companies operate in the legitimate law enforcement domain, which means they are working on behalf of their companies, and they are used, I mean, they are allowed to use the sender ID of the name of the bank for which they are sending out messages. So that's why SMS is an important tool if it is used legitimately and if it is used by companies for information purposes, not for marketing purposes.
Yeah, so we can't blame the instrument, can't blame SMS. And as you say, there are companies that do work with mass distribution of SMSs legitimately on behalf of actual brands, but they're not the brand themselves. So Twilio, for example, works with Marks and Spencer and eBay and Zendesk to reach out to their thousands of customers by means of SMS. But that's all in the legitimate space. But I think coming back to the OCBC phishing scam, you know, we started and I asked you, could it happen to again, and could it happen to anyone? And you said yes, because basically, if you're not on guard, you're not going to be aware, and then you're not going to be able to look out for certain things that, if your hackles were primed, if your hackles were up, you'd be able to spot very easily, I think, in terms of, you know, what is this URL? What does this URL look like? Does it have a .xyz at the end, or is it a legitimate bank URL? But I think part of the problem is we're so conditioned now with online banking. You can't do anything without this interaction between you, your computer, and your phone. You're trying to log on a web page, but then it sends you to your phone for the OTP, and then you got to come back to the computer. So you're used to this customer journey, you know? We've all been primed to do that. And so we do that unthinkingly, perhaps. And the question is, a lot of us along the way loved our heart tokens, but we're told this is going to be phased out and you now have to have a mobile token and do everything on your digital app, for example, digital token. So do situations like this raise a question whether or not hard tokens, which only you could have, that OTP couldn't be sent to anybody else because only you have that OTP, are hard tokens then safer than online 2FAs?
I totally agree with you, Michelle. I personally prefer the hard tokens because it separates the primary device, which could be the laptop or the phone, from the second factor, which is the hard token. In the phone, for example, the primary device and the second factor are in the same device. So if your phone is hacked, you're highly vulnerable. So I'm one of those few people who use a hard token for banking.
Do you? Wow.
Yes.
That's a relic, you know. Few of us have that.
and I am a customer of the bank that was hacked.
I see. Okay, I'm learning something here today, Raju. Raju Chellam is my guest. We are talking about the OCBC phishing scam and phishing scams in general. Could it happen again? Could it happen to you? Raju is chief editor for AI Ethics and Governance Body of Knowledge, a living document, a BOK, a body of knowledge. And he's also a trainer with ST, Straits Times. He is going to be putting together a masterclass on cybersecurity. Later on, we'll hear a little bit more about how you can help keep your teenager secure with his classes, upcoming ones, I understand. Raju, let's talk a little bit about what can be done to prevent this from happening again. I was reading an article that said there's an app that I can download to block spam calls. And then I tried to go to the app store to download them, but I didn't know which one because there were so many of these so-called apps that can block spam calls, telephone calls. Is there one?
There is one, but it's only for the iPhone in Singapore right now. It's called Scam Shield. Scam Shield, one word. It's only for the iPhone. The Android version is not available yet. It blocks calls from a database of blocked numbers and is managed by the Singapore police. The app filters all incoming calls and text messages, but it allows messages coming from people in your contact list. So how it does it is it compares an incoming call or message against a list maintained by the Singapore police to check if that number is from a scammer and blocks it. I'm surprised none of the mainstream media have reported this. It's something every iPhone user should download. I think an Android version is on the way. I hope the Singapore police can rush it to market as soon as possible.
Thank you, Raju. Scam Shield. I will be heading to the Singapore Apple Store to download that after this conversation. Raju, we know that there are tighter measures. MAS, Association of Banks, coming forward to say because of the threat of online phishing scams, there's a need for immediate steps to strengthen controls, and then longer-term preventive measures are being evaluated for their implementation in the coming months. So additional security measures, your overall assessment of some of these measures, will they significantly reduce chances of such a thing from happening again?
I don't think they will significantly reduce, but it will significantly raise awareness, which is more important. Because unless you are aware that something like this can happen to you, you will be complacent in your own world, thinking, oh, this will never happen to me.
Yeah.
And that's how many people fall for this scam. Mm-hmm. So let's step back one minute and look at how many scams happened in December alone. 1,200 in Singapore. This is from the official figures.
Gosh.
And it includes all kinds of e-wallet scams as well as phishing scams, impersonation scams, and whatever, 1,200. There is no report yet on how much money was lost, but I'm guessing it should be in the range of $7 million. And right now, the Singapore police are questioning 242 people involved in 600 scams that cost people about $7.5 million, excuse me. So it just lets people should know that no matter whether you're illiterate or you are a PhD, whether you work in IT or in cybersecurity, whether you're a government official or a police official, you can all fall for scam, either because of greed or because of fear or because of carelessness.
So among the changes, the tightening of measures to protect retail customers, a dedicated feedback team to actually listen to customers who may flag cases of fraud. So OCBC had initially drawn criticism over claims that the bank had taken too long to step in once those accounts were compromised and suspicious transactions had been made. And OCBC has acknowledged that its customer service and response fell short of customers' expectations, especially at a time of stress and anxiety where you don't want to be pressing 1 and 2 and waiting for that automated menu to be done with whatever it has to do before you can talk to a human being, because you want to flag a possible case of fraud. So how crucial is it for that human touch and a dedicated feedback team to listen to customers?
I think it's very crucial, mainly because it's an after effect. You normally call a bank or try to call a bank or rush to a bank's office after you know you have been scammed, right? So it's a post-event. We have to look for things that are pre-event. So there's one idea which is a very good idea, I think, which is to hold all transactions or sensitive transactions such as change of credit limit or transfer of funds to an overseas account for 12 hours, by which time either the bank or the telco or you yourself realize that it's a scam and can take steps to prevent it. I think prevention is more important than trying to find a cure, because most of these scammers are outside Singapore, and once the money has been transferred out to a foreign bank, there is very little anybody can do to get it back.
Yeah. That's a good new tighter measure. Basically, though, if this means that I'm going to have to wait a longer period of time before these transfers can be made, some transfers, and if we look at all these measures in totality, do you think that we're so used to things being done instantly? Banks seem to be racing for, helping you make banking frictionless, right? As easy as possible, as quickly as possible. Now, will these measures lead to more friction for online banking for us here in Singapore in the weeks ahead? Or do you think that is a necessary cost?
I think it's a necessary cost, and I think you have to balance convenience and speed with security. So between the two, convenience and security, I would always choose security. Mm-hmm. Because convenience will let you get to that sale faster or get that transfer done faster. Mm-hmm. However, if for any reason that transfer is happening to a scammer, then you will be more worried about the security of your money and security of your virtual self, which is way more important than how fast the transfer can happen.
Indeed.
So I think we should prioritize security above everything else.
Raju, finally, before we let you go, what are the hard lessons for consumers, do you think?
Okay, I think I have three lessons. One, ABC. A is awareness that cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. As a consumer, you need to be aware of the dangers that lurk on the internet. Take time to learn the basics of cybersecurity. As you said, Michelle, SPH conducts two masterclasses, one for adults and one for kids. It's great for you and your kids to also learn about this as soon as possible. B is beware. Beware that everybody online is suspect unless proved otherwise. Don't give out any personally identifiable information on the phone. Use your bank's app on the smartphone to transfer money. Don't click on links on SMS or email if you're not sure of the sender's identity. And C is call. Call your bank if you're not sure what to do. When you get a call of SMS or email telling you that your account is compromised, call the scam alert hotline. The number is 1-800-722-6688. The only problem is the scam alert hotline is only available Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 p.m. And lastly, go to scamalert.sg to learn about 22 types of scam. My final point, protect your virtual self as diligently as you would protect your physical self. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Raju. Great tips there. Raju Chellam, Chief Editor of AI Ethics and Governance Body of Knowledge, also a trainer. You can sign up for his online ST masterclasses on cybersecurity. Thank you, Raju.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.